If you've ever felt like your family didn't fit the traditional mold, this show is for you. I'm Jamie, host of the Queer Family Podcast. And every week we highlight LGBTQIA+ families and the beautiful, unique ways we build and show up for our families in a world that wasn't designed for us. We celebrate, highlight, uplift, and normalize queer families because our stories deserve center stage. New episodes every Monday. Listen wherever you get your pods.
Love is love is love on the Queer Family Podcast. Love is love.
This episode and the entire season is proudly brought to you by Pregnant Together. Pregnant Together is a virtual community of queer folks, solo parents, and anyone who has ever felt outside the box when it comes to creating your family. It is run by my friend, queer midwife, Maria Goodman, one of the best people on earth. And it's a community that offers tons of resources on everything from trying to conceive to parenting out there in these straight streets as a queer person or, you know, a solo parent who's not queer, but you feel outside the box. So if you're interested in joining a community and finding like-minded individuals, this is for you. And best of all, Queer Family Podcast listeners get their first month for free, y'all. All you have to do is go to www.pregnanttogether.com/QFP/discount. That's Queer Family Podcast /discount. Go check it out. It's also in our show notes, the link. Go check it out. Go find some community. You deserve it. We all deserve it. Do it. I love you. You're welcome.
The Queer Family Podcast. Love is love is love on the Queer Family Podcast. Love is love is love on the Queer Family Podcast. Love is love is love on the Queer Family Podcast. Love is love.
No, there's been a lot of discussions for us about the grief, the tensions. We're also interracial, so there's complexity there. My partner's white and American, so there's that jazz, right? And questions of culture and consciousness and values, right? On top of, you know, purely just genetics, right? Because that's also part of raising a child, right?
And yes.
It's a lot, but I think like the beauty of being queer and the beauty of having the queer and trans consciousness is we have this literacy, we have this emotional capacity, we have the space to have these types of questions. I can imagine that if you're doing IVF and you don't have this consciousness, it might not be so warm and sweet to have these conversations, even though, you know, you're feeling lost or confused.
100%, 100%. Welcome, y'all, to the Queer Family Podcast, the show all about family, but with gay. My name is Jamie. I am your host, and you, my beautiful friends, are tuning into this show that uplifts, highlights, celebrates, and normalizes LGBTQIA+ families in all of our beautiful identities. And y'all, you know, I'm going to say it because I say it every time. This episode does just that. Oof. I had the supreme pleasure of sitting down with Sean Dees. Sean Dees is a non-binary trans dad who just became a dad. And we talked about Sean Dees' journey towards finding his true self and his journey towards parenthood and also his journey towards becoming this person whose mission in life now is to help parents accept and love their trans children. Like, y'all, I love Sean. I could talk to Sean Dees for hours, and you're going to love hearing Sean Dees talk too, because I talk about, you know, certain things that come up time and time again in these episodes. And Sean Dees, like when we were talking about these certain themes, Sean Dees has a way of breaking things down in smart words that I don't use and like making it all seem like so beautiful and make sense in a way that I can't. So like Sean Dees could basically host this show for me and y'all would feel like I'm like more educated for it. But also like you still want to keep me, I know, because I don't know, because I'm the host of the show, but it's such a good conversation. I'm really excited for you to hear it. But before I roll that tape, I just want to talk a little bit about a little stuff. We are heading towards the end of this here season 15. There have been a lot of wonderful, wonderful episodes. And around the corner, y'all, is Pride. Pride is coming. The best time of year. It's the most wonderful time of the year. It's Pride. Pride. Pride Month is coming. And you know what I'm going to do for Pride? Because I think we need to. And I did it last year and it was so well received that I'm doing it again. Y'all, I am doing another Pride extravaganza. So Pride Month is going to be its entirely own season. I am doing the Pride extravaganza, which means instead of one weekly episode throughout the month of June, you're going to get two bi-weekly episodes, one on Monday, one on Thursday, throughout the entire month. So we're going to have eight beautiful episodes of people y'all are going to love to hear from. Some people you might actually know. Yeah, you might know them. Not to drop names or anything, but it might start off with, you know, the Queen, Rosie O'Donnell. Yeah, that's happening. And then maybe, you know, maybe another episode will be Colton Underwood, ex-pro football player turned bachelor, turned gay man, turned soon to be gay dad. Yeah, that might be happening too. And a lot of other amazing, amazing, amazing people and conversations that I can't wait to share with y'all. So get ready because Pride is happening. And you know what else is coming up, which will be the very first episode of our Pride extravaganza? LGBTQ Families Day is coming up. And we're just right now on the heels of Mother's Day, which can be kind of complicated for our families, right? And it seems like such a big deal when you look at social media and everybody makes such a big deal about Mother's Day. And yes, I had a great time on Mother's Day, but I also want to make an appeal to lift up LGBTQ Families Day for those of us who don't necessarily feel like Mother's Day fits us or Father's Day fits our families. Let's make LGBTQ Families Day the biggest thing we possibly can. Let's make it huge. It is June 3rd. It's coming up. It's the first Monday in June. And it was actually started by Dana Rudolph, who y'all might know as Mombian, like lesbian blogger extraordinaire, who is like the best in the world. Let me tell you a little story about Mother's Day because we just had it and it's fresh in my mind. And, you know, like we always, my wife and I, Anne and I always have the conversation like, are we going to do anything for Mother's Day? Am I giving you something? Are you giving me something? And we always say, no, it's pointless. It like cancels itself out in a way, right? The kids get a little bit excited. And like my daughter actually was really sweet. She brought like a tray of breakfast to me with a flower. The flower's behind me. If you're watching the video, it's really sweet. And it was sweet. She did something really sweet. My son made a card that he made after he saw that my like daughter did something for Mother's Day. And he was like, oh, right. It's Mother's Day. I forgot. And you know what he did? He solved our conundrum for us. Because it really does, the day cancels itself out. Like after they did their cute little things that they did, the day was just a normal day. Like nobody got anything special because we're both parenting. And how do you give one mom like the special time? And I guess you could split like one of us takes Father's Day and one of us takes Mother's Day, but that doesn't really work for us either because I'm not a dad and neither is she. And you know, so it's complicated for our families. But my son did something. I think he solved it. Here's what he did. He made his little card. He chicken scratched it real quickly. And then he came over and he said, I have a card. You know, my six-year-old. I have a card for you. And he goes, this side is for you, pointing to Anne. And this side is for you. So on one, on one side of the card that he had folded, it was a paper folded in half. On one side of the card, he wrote to mommy. And then she opened it. And on her side of the card, it said, I love you with a heart. And then on the other, he turned it around and it said, mama, and I opened my side and it said, I love you with a heart. So he solved it for us. We each got one side of the card, which kind of like speaks to us in general as a team, as moms. We split everything. We're 50-50 and we each got one side of the card. So that was, you know, as Mother's Day goes, that was pretty bomb. That was lit. As the kids say, it was sweet. It was sweet. And then we went on and had the most normal day possible. Let's make LGBTQ Families Day something bigger, shall we? Can we? Where every single identity and every single kind of parent out there gets celebrated. Let's do that. LGBTQ Families Day. Raise it up, y'all. June 3rd, let's get ready. I'm going to share some stuff about my family on LGBTQ Families Day, and I invite you to as well if you do the social media thing. And if you want to tag the Queer Family Podcast and Mombian, do that too, so we can raise it up on our social media too. Let's make it a thing. Let's do that. All right. It's a deal. It's a done deal. All right. That being said, it's time to roll this tape. I'll be back in your ears or on your screens next week to get you ready for the Pride extravaganza. Until then, enjoy this episode. Helen, Beulah, Nicole, and Gerson, my editor, who actually does roll the tape, which is hilarious. I've never mentioned Gerson. Gerson, he's real and he actually rolls the tape. Can you please roll this tape? Thank you so much. Enjoy.
Queer Family Podcast, love is love.
Hi, Shandice.
Hello.
It is wonderful to have you here. Let's just get right into it so the listeners get a good idea of who you are and why you're here talking to the Queer Fam Squad. I'm going to put up a little timer, but as you know, I will never cut you off. So I'm going to count you in. Are you ready? On your mark.
Yes.
Get set. Go.
I am Shandice. I use they, them pronouns, and just a bit about myself. Born and raised in Southern California and a scared, queer, trans thing that didn't really have words for it. So I grew up, went to pursue higher ed. I got my PhD in gender studies actually at UCLA. And there I discovered my transness. Transitioned and am now a non-binary and trans parent that does support work for parents with trans children. So yeah, I made the timer. There we go.
Dude, yeah. You did great. Nice Thank work. You. That was good. And you got it all in. I'm impressed.
Thank you.
A true professional. Let's dig in. So, okay, Shandice, we got to take it back. Let's take it back to young Southern California, Shandice, and discovering, I believe you said you discovered your queerness. You were a young, queer Shandice, make it in the world. Can we take it back to that and just dig in?
I was born and raised in the San Fernando Valley, so a little bit north of LA. I was raised in a home I consider a normal immigrant home to two Iranian parents, and the culture was very normalize the cisgender and heterosexual. I mean, that was taken for granted, right? And I, you know, did my best to try that for many years. You know, I was raised to be a good girl, and I was. I tried, you know, I really did. And that's probably why it took me a little longer. And, you know, I kind of knew ever since I was younger that, you know, I was different. Obviously, I didn't have the language for it. I did not have any role models that were sharing any different life stories or different ways of being in relationship. It was all very, very classically heterosexual and very, you know, very classic gender roles, right? A very, you know, clear man, male, masculine, and woman, feminine, submissive, right? And it was, that was the dynamic. And so it wasn't actually until I went to the Bay Area, I went to UC Berkeley for undergrad, and then I saw queer people just living and being. And I was like, what a thought, what a concept, you know, one might actually be queer and be okay, you know? So that was very eye-opening for me, was to see, you know, other queer people existing. And that was when I entertained that I could be queer, maybe some way, somehow, right? Not just totally closeted and hiding and repressing everything, you know?
Because your whole life, you really did know, like, there's something here, there's something, and but you're holding it in, you're holding it. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a very... Yeah. Yeah. Relatable story.
Yes, I'm sure it is. Yeah.
So college, Shandice discovers something new. And where do we go from there?
I think I kind of did the straddle dance where I was like queer in some spaces with friends, but definitely, you know, not out at all with family, you know, very much did that dance for many years. And I always had this personal like aversion to calling myself a lesbian. And I think now I realize it was because I was trans and I didn't want to be called a lesbian because that would mark me as a woman. So I always was just like, no, you know, like I like girls, and I would leave it right there, you know?
Uh-huh.
It was kind of funky for me. Obviously, I did not have the language for it. I have obviously intense emotions in my soul that, you know, led me to that choice that was like, no, you know, I don't really love that word. Yeah, actually, it wasn't until I went to my graduate program, I entered UCLA's gender studies program for PhD. And that was where I actually realized that I was trans. You know, that was a very big, major second awakening for sure.
I can only imagine. And like all, like leading up to this, so it sounds like you're dipping in, but you're not fully dipping in. So, and the family knows nothing. And you're still just kind of not sure how to identify because you're still figuring it all out. And then was there like a moment when you were like, oh.
There was, actually. That's a great story. I was teaching Introduction to Gender Studies. I was TAing. There was 1 week where I was tasked with teaching transgender identity. That was the topic for the week. So I had to do all these readings and prepare and go teach hundreds of kids about transgender identity. And that week, my partner just caught me. She was like, you seem very heavy. I was very depressed. I was super emotional, like really on one. And she picked up on it. She was like, what's up? You know, and she, you know, perhaps smarter than I, was like, you know, could it be that you have feelings about this week? Is there any part of you that thinks you could be trans? And that just shattered my whole world. You know, that was the first time in my life anyone had asked me that as a genuine question, right? As opposed to offering transness as ostracization or social death. She was actually saying, could you be trans? Should we explore this?
Interesting.
And adding on top of it, you know, I love you no matter what, and we'll figure it out if that's the answer, you know? And that was it. That was all that I needed. No one had ever asked me if I could be trans. This is a genuine area of concern or curiosity, you know?
Wow. That's got me like feeling some things, really, honestly. Like it took an invitation in almost.
Yeah. Yeah. And I say wise because she had to see that. Yeah. She had to see that from where she was, and we're still together. We are going
what?
Strong.
Oh yes, my God, that's amazing.
Yeah.
Ah, I love that.
We went forward. I transitioned. We've been together now many years, I think almost 9 years, and have our first baby. So yeah, we kept it going.
Holy moly. That's amazing, Shandiz.
Yeah. Thank you.
So you make the realization, it's this wonderful, as Oprah says, aha moment.
Yeah.
And then what was the journey? I mean, I know there's a journey.
It was quite a journey, right? I think I was 24 years old when I realized that I was trans, or when I let myself realize that I was trans, we'll say that, right? And that was, I'd say the first couple months, I did nothing but cry, you know, I did nothing but just weep. I was depressed. I was I was like a dark cloud because in my entire life, transness had only been presented as something bad, something miserable, something terrifying, you know? And it was like, oh shit, like, you know, I've already struggled a lot as a queer woman of color, and this is only going to make it harder. This is only going to make it more difficult. I'm going to experience more pain and more suffering and perhaps more violence. And that's scary. It's a lot to chew on, you know? And I was scared. So for 2 months, I had to really go through all that realization on top of 24 years of not being who I wanted to be. You know, there's a lot in there it was a really scary time to realize, you know, that you are going to, at that point, I thought, just receive so much more pain and so much more suffering to become trans and to be a trans person of color, because I'd already experienced a lot of hatred and struggle as a queer woman of color. And so for me, it was a deep moment of releasing emotions. Of a lot of them were very painful, you know? So it was a tough couple months, but I think on the other side of it, you know, I came out, I emerged and was like, face first, let's go, you know, like call the doctors, you know, get the appointments, get it all figured out.
Let's roll it. And you had your partner, and your partner stayed supportive, which is just absolutely beautiful.
Yes.
And how about family?
I say this a lot in a lot of my work. You know, I had a lot of assumptions. I had a lot of assumptions about how my family would respond. I made a lot of declarations about who they were and how they would receive me, you know? And my story is one in that, you know, I came forward and I shared myself with my family, and none of my assumptions were true, you know? None of my fears were true, right? And that's not really a story that gets told all the time, you know? Yeah, it was something.
Wow. Go ahead, family.
Yeah.
I'm snapping for him. Yeah. That's amazing.
Yeah. You know, I thought I would lose my family. I thought they would kick me out, stop inviting me to things. You know, I thought this might be the one thing that does it. Like I said, I'm raised Iranian, and Iranian culture, family is sacred and it's paramount. And so for me, it was a really, really tough moment where I, you know, was really resting in the fear of, oh, what if I lose all this, you know? And I chose to hope that they would choose to be open and love me instead. And, you know, it wasn't elegant. It didn't happen overnight. It wasn't perfect, right? But it was made very clear to me that I was loved, even though this was confusing at first and this was unclear at first, right? And that's what made a difference. Yeah, that's what now, you know, I am fully a part of the family. No one even thinks about it twice, right? Like that's the journey. And it's actually wild to sit here, you know, a few years down the road and look back and think, you know, like, wow, what if I could tell myself that, you know, that's kind of crazy.
But that's why you telling your story is so important, because it helps so many like you years ago.
Yeah.
You know, it gets better.
It certainly can. You know, there's love there.
It certainly can. That's what I should say. Yeah. It certainly can. So then what happens? You get that ball rolling. You call the doctors. You start tell me what you want to tell me. You don't have to tell all the details, obviously.
Yeah.
But I want to get to it all. Whatever you want to tell me.
Like I said, I was 24 when I let myself realize that I was trans. So for me, it was like, oh, I can do that. Like, let's do it. Let's do it all yesterday. Right. So it was very quick, you know, hormones lined up, top surgery very quickly, you know, did everything. Luckily had supportive folks in the, you know, medical team at UCLA, which was awesome. And yeah, it just moved very quickly in that direction. I think what's interesting for me is, you know, the physical transition alongside a social transition. I had lots of, you know, discrepancies, right? Like learning this for myself, coming from a place of deep, deep fear and like complete lack of knowledge of transness. And then to be trans, you know, like the next month, and to have to answer questions or explain things and figure all that stuff out. You know, it's tough. Early transition is really tough. It's got to be one of the toughest things that we navigate in the trans community.
Yeah.
For me, the story continued where, you know, a few years later, I was like, do I want a family? You know, and that's also a big question of like, you know, making children. How do you make children as trans people?
Yes.
Right?
Yes. It's a big question. What year was it that you started your transition? Just for context.
It was about 7 years ago, something like that. So,
okay.
Like 2016.
Wow, that's 7 years ago. Oh my God. I think it's important to get the context and the time because, we have progressed a lot. And then also we have not. Oh, and also you were also in this community, like your career that you're going into, you're going into gender studies. So you are surrounded by this whole community and you're kind of an expert on gender studies, yet you're going through your own metamorphosis and discovering all these things and discovering the fear. And I can imagine that must have been really hard. I mean, among everything else, you know.
I say God is funny because I entered the PhD program in gender studies, no idea that I was trans. You know, like if you read my entry statement, it would have said, you know, all this stuff about being a queer woman of color, very confident, very clear that that's who I was. And that's what I sought to study, you know, which was hilarious. And then lo and behold, they tell you to teach trans stuff. And then you realize you're trans the following year. And there it sends you down a massive life transition, you know. And it was, like I said, God is funny because now I do have my PhD in gender studies, which people would assume is intentional, I think. But I like to remind them that it was not. It was absolutely not.
God is funny. God is funny. Yeah. You get put where you get put, right? Interesting.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. Okay. We'll be right back.
Queer Family Podcast. Love is love.
All right. So you make it through the time, and I'm sure it's always ongoing, just like for me, coming out is still ongoing, and discovering myself is always ongoing as well. And you're with your partner still, and now you're thinking about family and, oh man, there's a lot of things to think about.
Yeah, there is. It's funny, you know, as a young queer kid, you know, I was raised where my parents were always like, oh, when you get married, when you marry a husband, when you have kids, right? And I always just like literally just like shrugged it off because I was like, that's not happening. That's just not happening, right? And so I attached having kids with marrying a husband. So I just disposed of all of it, right? So it was very clear to me that that's just not happening, right? And therefore never actually entertained or allowed myself to entertain if I wanted my own kids, right? Because it was just seen as, oh, you're queer. Oh, now you're trans. You're definitely never having that life experience, right? And I wrote it off for myself for many years, right? And it wasn't until I have a friend, couple, they're a couple, the man is trans masculine, trans guy, married to a cis woman, and they had a baby, and they FaceTimed us from the delivery room. They had a baby, and when they FaceTimed us and we saw the baby, I was like, oh, whoa.
Hey, it's Hillary Frank from The Longest Shortest Time, an award-winning podcast about parenthood and reproductive health. We talk about things like sex ed, birth control, pregnancy, bodily autonomy, and of course, kids of all ages. But you don't have to be a parent to listen. If you like surprising, funny, poignant stories about human relationships and, you know, periods, The Longest Shortest Time is for you. Find us in any podcast app or at longestshortesttime.com.
Like, it can be done. It can be done. I don't even, like, even she was pregnant, we didn't really, we're like, yeah, right, for sure. Like, no. But then when the baby was born and we saw the baby and it was on the FaceTime, I was like, wow, a queer trans couple made a baby. And it is possible. You know, it kind of like, it just turned something inside of us, right? And I remember that day. I remember the day she was born. It was such a transformative day. We just completely, we were on the couch. We were like blown away as if a tornado had hit our house, because it was really the question of, oh my God, can we do this too? Do we want to do this too? Because we never entertained that. And, you know, within a very short amount of time, we concluded that the answer was actually yes.
Wow. Yeah. You're not alone in just writing it off as a queer person, right? Like, I've spoken to so many people who, when I ask them that question, it's, yeah, no, I just never saw it for me because of this and because of that. And so you're not alone in that.
Yeah.
And it's interesting how we, how all of us differently come to the decision that, oh, wait, I do want that. And now, how am I going to do that? And
how do I do it?
And so we've got a lot of decisions to make. So walk me down the path and the decisions you made together.
The first question was, you know, like literally how? Prior to that is, do we really want this? And then it's a really funny story. We, because I was affiliated with UCLA, I, you know, did a lot of the stuff through UCLA, and we were parked outside, you know, somewhere on the street. We had a, you know, meter, and we had a 2-hour meter. We went up for our appointment, and sure enough, the appointment took a little over, and it was like, you know, I was like, babe, go to the car, make sure we don't get a ticket. So she went out to the car, and I was, you know, settling, finishing up, and she had said to herself, if we get a ticket, we're not going to pursue this IVF stuff. We're not going to get a baby. We're not going to do all this crap. I had said to myself, if we get a ticket, we're not going to do this. We are absolutely, like, this is a sign. And then she gets to the car and there's a freaking ticket.
Oh, no.
And she just starts sobbing. She just starts bawling. And then I get to the car and I'm like, is there a ticket? And then we both confessed that we had made that declaration that we had decided. And then because we were so emotional, we were like, holy shit, we want this baby. So we were just like, forgot all about it. We were like, you know, pay the ticket. Who cares? IVF's going to cost a lot anyway, like $300 on top. Who cares? You know,
it's like when you've already put like thousands of dollars on your credit card. All right, whatever. Just add that. Right. We already owe so much.
Right. Yeah. It's like, what's a parking ticket compared to IVF? Nothing.
Oh my God. All right. So you've decided you're going to do IVF, but how are you going to go? What are we doing?
And that was huge for me. You know, as a trans masculine person, I don't think I saw much discussion about how we do it. So for me, I decided I was going to do an egg retrieval. I decided I wanted to be, and like my partner and me both kind of intuitively felt like that was the way to do it, that it would be my egg and she would carry the child. I didn't have a desire to carry, and, you know, she did. So that was the way we did that. The stories that I've seen that are noteworthy, that are like prominent, is usually trans men that carry their children, right? And that's kind of the stuff we see is like seahorse dads, trans guys carrying babies, right? But I'd heard very little about like trans masculine people, trans men who just do the egg retrieval, right? So I did an egg retrieval, right? We made embryos, right, with donor sperm, and then my partner carried the baby.
Okay, I'm going to pause you here because, you know, this is the Queer Family Podcast, so we have to dig deep. Because so much goes into everything you just mentioned, right? So
yes,
you decided that you would do the egg retrieval and it would be, so the genetics that would carry on would be yours. And both of you were like really on board with that. And I know you cannot speak for your partner, but I'm wondering if there was ever, was she ever worried about not having a genetic tie? You can't really speak for her. So, I mean, I don't know if you know anything about.
Yeah, I do. we're gay. We talk. Yeah.
That's the best thing you've said so far. We're gay. We talk.
No, it's a heavy question. It's a real question.
Yeah.
And it's one that I think doesn't get enough attention as well in the story, right? Like, what does it mean for, you know, the non-genetic partner in the situation? And how do they hold that? I know there's been a lot of discussions for us about the grief, the tensions. We're also interracial, so there's complexity there. My partner's white and American, so there's that jazz, right? And questions of culture and consciousness and values, right? On top of, you know, purely just genetics, right? Because that's also part of raising a child, right?
And yes.
It's a lot, but I think like the beauty of being queer and the beauty of having the queer and trans consciousness is we have this literacy, we have this emotional capacity, we have the space to have these types of questions. I can imagine that if you're doing IVF and you don't have this consciousness, it might not be so warm and sweet to have these conversations, even though, you know, you're feeling lost or confused.
100%, 100%. And I think that's why the queer community needs a more amplified voice, especially when it comes to this kind of stuff, because of everything you just said. You say it so much more eloquently than I ever do, but yes, and yes, and yes. Okay. Yeah. So can you tell me anything about the discussions you had?
Well, God, I wish she was here.
I know.
It's a lot of grappling with grief and also grappling with, you know, like what it means to also see a living child that you've also birthed and raised, right? And be like, you know, moments of it matters and moments of it doesn't matter at all, right? And how do you hold all of that at the same time? Because in truth, you know, our child is young. She's only 1 and 1 month, so she's new, right? So not a whole lot of talking and consequential deep discussion, right? But we think critically and we think a lot. So obviously we're very concerned. Obviously it's your first child, so you have a lot of thoughts and feelings about how it's going. But yeah, I think just holding a lot of space for those tensions and those questions. Yeah.
It's good to hold space for that. Everybody can experience it, but it is also something that is very unique to our families in general. Right. And I want to say also the reciprocal IVF route that you and your partner did is really just one of the most wonderful things in the world that we can do to both get a connection somehow, which, and I love that. It is also expensive, as we all know.
I don't look at the receipts. I don't look at the receipts anymore. Yeah. We're thinking for the next one, we got to go back and do it all over and start all over, you know, and it's exciting. Wow. It's expensive, but it's like, that's literally what money's for.
Okay. So there's going to be another.
Yeah, of course.
Right. Oh,
yeah.
We'll money see. Is meant to be spent. That is what I said all through our fertility process. And they lasted a long time. Money is meant to be spent. Like, and if you have it or if you have, like, we used pension. Like, it was like too much. Like, we did stuff you probably shouldn't do. And we're still paying it off. But we got our babies. And then another big decision here, and a huge decision for everyone, for all of us, is the donor.
Yeah.
Now, what was your thinking going into the donor? There's so many things to think about, you know, anonymous versus known donor, blah, 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 blah. I would just love to hear, I want to hear your donor story. I call it lovingly the search for the superhuman because we get a little crazy, or at least I did. So let's go through.
Yeah. So it's actually hilarious. I mentioned I'm Iranian, and I think the desire was we picked an Iranian donor for the child. And I think the idea at that point, this was very early, was if my partner also does an egg retrieval, if my partner also wants to go that route, the children would have some Iranian component and they would be siblings. It was very simple, actually. There was only a couple options and one of them was healthier than the other two. And that was it. So for me, it was actually super simple. It was not like searching through an endless database.
Well, and that's the thing. And that's why things need to get a lot better with sperm donation and how they reach out to find these people and where they find them, because there is a shortage of donors of color.
Yeah.
So it makes the decision easy, but sometimes it would be nice to have more choice, you know?
Yeah. It's actually funny. I expected, like, I'm a professional researcher. I expected to spend weeks, months, even longer, you know, researching. I think I spent like an hour, you know? It was like so not...
There you go.
So not what I thought. I spent so much more time doing everything else. And it's funny because people were like, you know, I doubted. I'd second guess. I'd be like, was that rash to just choose that so quickly? Like, was that, you know, was that a little bit preemptive? But obviously, knock on wood, you know, we had great egg retrieval, great embryos, and healthy born first. So, you know, we're blessed. It worked out.
I'm so happy for you. That's wonderful.
Yeah, thank you.
That it was, yeah, it was smooth. Not everybody can say that. And when it does happen, I'm so happy to tell the story because it does happen. I have one more question regarding the process for you.
Yeah.
And you can answer it or you don't have to answer it. This is totally up to you. But I'm wondering if the egg retrieval was in any way difficult for you.
Yeah, totally. Absolutely. It was extremely difficult, you know, and I think I have never let any doctor anywhere blow the belt ever in my life, ever.
Oh, wow.
Never.
Yeah.
You know, I even had a friend who was like, well, what if you have cancer? And I was like, then I'd rather die. I literally was like, I do not, like, no one ever, right? So it's deep dysphoria.
Very deep.
No one's coming near me. Absolutely not.
Wow.
And in my mind, I was like, how the hell am I going to do an egg retrieval? You know, I was like, how, what? Like, you know, it just doesn't add up. It's not going to happen. And I don't know what it was. I think it was a deeply important spiritual experience for me to have this consciousness. It was almost like once me and my partner entertained having the baby, we were carried by some sort of, honestly, like it felt like a spiritual gust that carried us through that year, through IVF, through the retrieval. I felt a degree of calmness and confidence in myself and my body going to do an egg retrieval that I would have never felt, you know, prior. Absolutely not. As I just told you a moment ago, right? But it was just so clear to me that I felt safe. I felt okay. And I knew what it was for, right? And I knew it was for my future children. So I think that added to, like, of course I would do this for them. I wouldn't even think twice, right?
And
obviously it was super challenging naturally, but like I said, beautiful team of doctors, UCLA. They were very good. They took care of us and that helps.
It really matters.
It does. It really does. And, it's an invasive procedure. It's not
And
cute.
It's not it's just not one invasive procedure. Right. It's right. Over the course of time, right?
Right. And you're taking all these shots, which is, you know, for me as a trans masculine person, you know, I've been taking testosterone for however many years. And then they tell you, you got to stop. And now you have to take, you know, you have to take birth control. You got to take estrogen. You got to take whatever they call them, you know, all those different shots and stuff. And it's a lot, right? So I obviously lightened my schedule and was like, we're just going to do this. We're going to take care of this, you know, because for me, you know, to, you know, as queer and trans people, it's like, we don't just have sex and create children. It's like a dedicated, committed process.
Only,
so we have to do
only.
It. Yes. Yeah, that sounds like a fairy tale. Sometimes I'm like, that's hilarious. Is that really where the others come from?
I know. Isn't that so funny?
It felt like I was in a heightened state, which makes little logical sense, but it makes total sense to me in my life experience because I said, like, I knew it was for my future children. And I kind of carried with that awareness of, you know, I would absolutely do this for them. I would never do this for myself or for anyone else, but I would do this for them. And so luckily they knock you out for the final thing. So that was nice.
Yeah.
And then obviously came out of that. And I think even after it, I was like, one, thank God it was successful. We got enough embryos, healthy, stored, frozen, beautiful. Don't have to do it again. I think I look back on it. I'm like, how did I do that?
Right.
Like, I can't believe I did that. You know, it's actually just like an eclipse of my dysphoria happened and something allowed me to be able to do something bigger than myself, which obviously now I'm like, of course, I'm grateful that I made that choice, 100%.
I do want to highlight the fact that you got a good amount of eggs and it was a success and you had been on testosterone before. So I just want to highlight that
yes,
it still is possible.
Yes, absolutely. Yes. Thank you for saying that.
Yeah.
You know, when I was in my 20s and starting my transition, my doctor, you know, told me, they're like, if you start T, you won't be able to have kids. They tell you this.
Right.
They tell you this. And this might be outdated now. They might say something different, but this was,
I hope so,
7-8 years ago. And you know, she was telling me, you know, go get your eggs checked, go visit the doctors now. Right. And I was like, no, bro, I've waited 24 years. I'm trans. I want the testosterone. Do not get in my way. You know, so I was younger and I took the risk. Yeah, I took the risk against her advice. And I said, I don't care.
It's life saving. It's life saving.
I want to take the T. So I've done some work and tried to help change the conversation with some medical doctors that taking testosterone absolutely does not mean that you cannot do an egg retrieval down the road. It does not mean that at all, actually. So that's huge. That's actually huge. No one told me that. That's good to know.
It is huge. And I also think that there really just was not enough research too. And also just like ignorance and also probably some kind of transphobia that was inside so many in the medical industry anyway, right? So I think it's really important to note that because I've spoken to a good number of people who it has worked even after being on tea.
Yeah. I mean, I was on tea for at least 4 or 5 years before I did this and still obviously worked out, worked well, had healthy eggs, healthy embryos, you know, it all, it worked. So it doesn't necessarily mean it's the end of your child creating at all.
Good to know. Thank you for sharing that. It went relatively smoothly. It sounds like it was like a relatively easy pregnancy and then baby comes.
Baby comes, baby came, and it's already been a year and some change already. Yeah.
And how's it going? How's life with baby?
I love it. You know, I love it. It's funny because I had a lot of elders and the narrative was, oh, kids are hard. They're expensive. It's difficult. That was kind of the rhetoric in the folks around me. And I've just been like, I'm having a great time. I don't know what you're talking about. Like, yeah, it's sleepless. Yeah, there's some challenges. But now, you know, it's like, can you sit back and imagine yourself without this child in your life? Of course not. You know, it's worth all of that. So it's actually been beautiful. And it's prompted me to start, you know, I changed my work a little bit. And now I work with parents. I work with parents of trans children because I have become a parent and I see how sacred and beautiful and loving that relationship is. Like that type of unconditional love, we're not really invited into that frequently, right? So the parent-child relationship is kind of where we're asked to love unconditionally very commonly. So it's been, a major pivot in my own consciousness and my own work to say, you know, parents who love their kids but have kids who transition and they don't understand that. They love them, but they need some help. So I've now stepped in and offer some support for parents who can say, I love my kid and I don't know what the hell's going on, you know?
Okay, this was a beautiful segue because this is where we're going to go. Let's go here. Okay, what are you doing? Let's talk about it. And because I'm just, also, you could do this whole interview without me. Like, you're just, I love it. You're going everywhere I want to go. So let's talk about what you're up to and what you're doing.
For me, there was two angles that really supported this choice of starting to work with parents. One, it's my own transition. You know, I saw my mom. I saw my mother. You know, I watched her raise me with super classic gender ideas, right? Men are men, women are women. There's no playing around, you know, like that's how I was raised. I watched her believe and reproduce a lot of homophobic and transphobic ideas. Mm-hmm. And I also knew that I was trans and I had to come forward and share that with her, right? And so I did a lot of that work with her, watching her as a child of a parent that's transphobic, right? And watched her learn and choose love, right? That was absolutely massive for me in my own consciousness, right? And then on the flip side, to have my own child as a trans parent, right? And to look down and see, like, I have a little kid. How am I going to raise this person? What do I, you know, want to teach them? But on top of that, right, I think it just gave me a lot of compassion for the parent-child dynamic to have both angles and to look at upwards towards my mom, downwards towards my child, and to look out into the world and see a lot of parents not getting compassion, not getting the space, right? Like, I've worked a lot with the queer and trans community. I hold a lot of groups and workshops and courses and things of the sort. And, you know, I work a lot with people to heal and move forward and cultivate, you know, their own confidence and consciousness in queer and trans joy, right? That's a lot of the work that I do. And then, you know, they'll come with me and they'll work with me or they'll do all this stuff. And, you know, they'll still come and share how, you know, mom's being like this or dad's being like this or grandpa's being like this, right? And I don't think that there's not love in those relationships. I think there's not compassionate guidance, right? And so I was like, we have a void, we have a need, right? These elders love their youth. Mm-hmm. I believe that, right? And so what we need is a space, someone who's willing to compassionately guide people who have that love, but may not have the language, may not have the understanding, may not have the tools, right? And I think that's the basis of the work that I get to do now. And it's beautiful. It's absolutely amazing.
I absolutely love all of it. I really do. And I love what you said about unconditional love and how it's really allowed in that parent-child relationship. And I've never really thought about that. Like, I always thought about the unconditional love there is between, but that's a deep kind of love that has its own challenges. That's amazing. That's really beautiful. So like, I'd imagine that there might be somebody, some trans parents out there listening who are thinking, oh my God, I want Shondise to talk to my mom. So who should reach out? And I mean, run the gamut of like, who can you help? Because I think it's important what you're doing. And I absolutely love it.
People that I'm working with and the people that I'm thinking of and the different types of folks that have come to me, right? Grandmother of a non-binary grandchild, right? Or a mother, right? Of a non-binary adult, right? Or, you know, a father of a child who's showing signs of gender variance and is scared or confused, right? Mm-hmm. I work with primarily people that are cis and heterosexual primarily, and have little to no awareness of what it means to be trans, right? And they love their young person in their lives, whoever it is, right? But they don't know what to do and they don't know where to go and they don't know how to hold all these feelings, because the truth is, you know, a lot of times, 99% of the time, the trans person that's coming into their transition, figuring themselves out, they're scared, you know, and they're going through such intense emotions. The child cannot hold mom's grief or dad's confusion or grandpa's fear. That's just not the place for it, you know? And that's where I get to be of service. Or I get to help people have another space to come to me and say, I'm scared for my child, or I'm uncertain what this means for their future. That's for, you know, a trained transgender professional that can help you navigate some of those questions. That's not for your 17-year-old. You know, they can't hold all that, right? So yeah, I work with not just parents, also grandparents, elders, anyone, siblings, you know, people that just want some space to process the huge emotions that are natural to come out when someone transitions. It's a big thing, right? And we don't want to pretend like it's not. So
it's a big thing for the loved ones who, you know, it's a big thing for everyone. Yeah. And it also can be the most beautiful thing if it's embraced in the right way.
It is. Yeah. It's actually, I say it's a key to learning how to love so much better and so much harder. And, you know, some people get to, and some people might skip out on that. And that's less love, right? That's less love for them in their lives. But I think it's a beautiful thing I've observed and I've witnessed with my own mother. I've witnessed with several, you know, of the clients, the way that lives transform when they choose this, right? And it's a step. It's a challenging step. But if you take it, life is really wildly beautiful on the other side. So
who doesn't want more love? Come on now. Come on.
You know, I've had people say, I'm sending my parents, but like, be warned, they're a little old fashioned or something like that. Right.
Right.
And in my head, I'm like, yeah, that's exactly what this is for. I was like, don't worry about it. You know, this won't be the first time someone asked me a question that said, this is what it's about, right? Is to make space. Obviously, if they're hostile and pestering and harassed, that's a different story, but that's not the tone. The tone is usually, I'm accepting, I'm curious, I don't understand, right? I want to learn.
Help me understand. Space, yeah.
We can work with that. That's beautiful. To me, that's really important, is to just be open and be willing to listen. If I have that, I'm gliding.
This is just absolutely wonderful. I just want to add to you, Shondise, you always have to make sure that you are safe and protect yourself and always take care of yourself with all of this too, because it is deeply personal work for you.
Yes, it is. It is. It is. And it's the love that unites people, families, that guides me, because I think there's nothing more beautiful than that, you know, and I've seen it happen, and it's an honor to be able to do that type of work. So
tell everyone where they can find you and all the things.
Well, you know, if you're interested in the parent support sessions or anything like that, email is best, right? So emailing me at shawndeez@ucla.edu. So that's shawndeez@ucla.edu. And otherwise, I'm also on Instagram. People can follow me and, you know, see all the different types of workshops and groups that I hold at Dr. Shawndeez. So again, it'd be at Dr. and shawndeez. And there I also post, you know, other types of groups that I hold, which, you know, I hold the Trans Joy group regularly a couple times a year. I hold, you know, an Embracing Multitudes group, which is specifically for queer trans Iranians. I'm holding the next one actually during Pride Month, so we can have a little community there. And I'm actually in the process of making a new space, a new group, which is kind of, don't quite have the name figured out. So I'll just say this, it's a space for queer trans people to kind of cultivate a more spiritual understanding of themselves and what their purpose is and why they're here. And it's kind of a space for more spiritual consciousness in the queer community.
All of that will be in the show notes, so everybody can find you that way as well. Absolutely adore you. I think that
you
are helping to make this world a better place, and I really appreciate you so much.
Likewise. Thank you for holding the space and the discussion. Thank you for doing it.
You're amazing.
Yes, thank you so much. Appreciate it. Thank you.
Queer Family Podcast.
Whew. Well, folks, I hope you enjoyed that episode as much as I enjoyed it. And if you did enjoy it, feel free to listen to another or watch another. I have so many episodes for your listening or viewing pleasure. Just go pick one and enjoy. There's a lot. There really is. And also, if you really do like this show, please, I know I say it all the time, but please do consider supporting the show on Patreon. You're just going to go to patreon.com/thequeerfamilypodcast. You're going to pick a tier, you're going to join, and you're going to get that bonus content. And you're also going to get my love and adoration for the rest of my life. I love you all. Thanks for tuning in. Keep on tuning in, and I'll see you next time. Mwah.
Pride Daily.
Hi there, I'm Kev McGrath, and this is Pride Daily. A homophobic TikToker's crying his little heart out over AI videos portraying him as gay. Next, as video games firm Electronic Arts is sold to a Saudi-led consortium, is their LGBTQ+ content at risk? And Sylvester Stallone's wife says the children of Hollywood stars turn out transgender because their lives lack structure. Sylvester's clearly the brains of the outfit. Pride Daily is the world's only daily LGBTQ+ news podcast, bringing you the top three global stories in just 2 minutes. Everyone's welcome. Search Pride Daily in your pod app.